It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. When it comes to life goals, we tend to get wrapped up in the wants of others. We compare ourselves to others. Author Meg Myers Morgan says, no, don't do that unless it's a haircut. It's hard not to want the haircuts of others. Don't confuse your wants is the first of five tactics on the journey to being a better life negotiator. The book is called Everything is Negotiable, the five tactics to get what you want in life, love, and work. Meg Myers Morgan is an assistant professor and directs the graduate programs in public administration and nonprofit management at University of Oklahoma. She talks a lot with students about where their lives are headed. Meg, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Kate. Thank you for having me.
So I was thinking in preparing to talk with you, we were doing a bit of negotiation back and forth with how we should treat your title, how we should introduce you to the segment. And then it was like this aha moment because you talk about thinking about your expertise on a broader scale and not to be so quick to tie yourself to something like a university or an entity. Can you give us some advice on how to craft our own elevator pitch on our own job title?
Yeah, I often tell students or clients that I work with that you need to really develop sort of a vision or mission statement for your life and or your career. And when people start to do that, they say, "Oh, I'm an accountant at this firm." And I say, "No, try to craft one that doesn't include your job title or where you work." And then people really start to think about their skills and their expertise in a broad sense, and then they start to get really excited about kind of who they are regardless of where they work. And I think it makes them feel a little bit less stuck in the job they currently have.
Why tying yourself to your work or to your university? It's a major university.
Yeah.
Why not?
I guess it depends on context, but mm-hmm. I like to see myself as movable. And while I love being at the university and will probably be here forever, it doesn't mean anything to someone else if I just say I'm a professor at the University of Oklahoma. They may start to make assumptions about me versus if I explain I'm an expert in career development, because that's truly what I'm doing. I'm training in the classroom and then I'm helping students sort of craft their careers. It lets them see what I can do for them, not what I do for myself.
In your role as a professor and the head of a graduate program, you've noticed a distinct trend in the way your male and female students assess their own values and goals. Women negotiate more than their male counterparts, you write that, and then they negotiate with themselves more. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So it's interesting because they actually negotiate, for salary a lot less, as we know from studies, but you're absolutely right. They negotiate with themselves, and a great example that I notice is I talk to people that are interested in graduate school, and men, and again, these are broad brushstrokes, sort of talk about logistics, like tell me the cost of this program, tell me the schedule, tell me how long it'll take me. And women sort of come in and say, I just need you to know I have kids or I want to have kids, or, they sort of tell me all the reasons they can't probably do this graduate program. And I just think it's interesting in the way that women kind of stop themselves before they even get to do what they want. They sort of negotiate themselves out of what they're really going after.
What do you tell them then when you notice this going on?
Yeah, well, we often have, I've had prospective student meetings that last 2 hours. So sometimes it's a therapeutic moment where I have to remind them that there's not going to be a right time for anything. And I think women try to compartmentalize more. I'll have the baby now, and then I'll do the career or the, vice versa. And I just explain to them, if you just do everything now, you'll have no choice but to make it work. So if you go ahead and have the baby, and I was pregnant during my doctoral work, so that I sort of speak from experience that once you sort of sign up for the things you want, you negotiate around those instead of waiting for that right time, which never comes.
So you're saying that things will kind of figure themselves out if you just go for what you really want?
Yes. However, I know that sounds easier than it is. It does take people negotiating for that, what that's going to look like. And it usually takes a lot of support, and it's asking for that support. It may be negotiating with a boss around time you might need, or a spouse around support and help you might need at home. And I find that women sort of take on the expectation society has put on us about, you know, having it all and doing it all, but being perfect in all of that. And so it's really about kind of redefining the terms so you get what you want. And I think that women maybe don't feel like they have control of those terms.
Meg Myers-Morgan says big goals start with small plans. We're talking about her new book, Everything is Negotiable. You can join in, 800-642-1234. We'll pick up this conversation in just a bit here on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Author Meg Myers-Morgan says, ask for what you want, and if for some reason you didn't ask for what you wanted in the moment, understand it's never too late to reopen negotiations. We're exploring how to be better negotiators in life. The new book is Everything is Negotiable. Your thoughts and stories as well, 800-642-1234. What steps have you taken in your life to determine the course you'll take? Do you find it difficult to ask for what you really want? Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. Meg, you write that choices are often the enemy of wants. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I think people get really paralyzed by the idea of making a choice, and they specifically think that one choice will eliminate another. And so when you think about trying to determine your career or picking a major in college, the second you pick it, you think you've eliminated everything. But I argue that's when you open up the door for even more choices, and that choices are the thing that get you to what you want. So you have to be mindful of that and make choices so you can get exactly what it is you've desired.
And your next piece of advice is to own the terms of our lives, to make our own narratives. Mm-hmm. How do we get bogged down by the narratives that are in our heads?
I mean, even the way we talk about ourselves, I've noticed, like on social media, women will post, thank you to my spouse for putting up with me. It's little stuff like that, but we do it all the time where we sort of take down ourselves and our narrative. And I always say that people can only think and speak as highly of you as you're willing to do for yourself. And so a part of taking control of the terms are just redefining how you choose to see yourself, taking that one step further in how you choose to talk about yourself.
There's also the observations of people around you in your universe. There's this point in the book where you said someone came into your office and said, you know, your fellow professors around this university think you're a little bit too self-promotional. How did you handle that?
Oh, not well. But I think over time I realized we can't really take third-hand or second-hand feedback too specifically. I argue that people need to only worry about that feedback that's coming to you directly. And as I go a lot into the book, criticism is a big part of rising up as someone in your career, especially as a woman. And so anytime you have success or do anything worthy, you're going to have criticism, and just making sure that you're not believing that more than you're believing in yourself. And so over time, I've learned, you know, people can say that doesn't make it true, and to not let it deter me from going further in my career.
And so how do we determine that it's not true? Like, how can we have that awareness?
Well, I think maybe like an internal inventory about how you see yourself. You know, I argue that you can, you know, pan for the gold in there. Was there a kernel of truth in what I was hearing? Maybe. I don't think the whole thing was true. I do think I'm a very excitable and extroverted academic, which is a little bit more rare. And so I think it was both telling of maybe how I was carrying myself, but just how people were perceiving me. And am I willing to change my personality to make people feel better? No. But does it make me more mindful about how I might be perceived? Of course. And I think it's just sort of taking a moment to reflect about how you see yourself.
And right there, you're crafting your story, right?
Yes, and right.
Calling yourself an extroverted academic.
I own those terms.
I think you do. So, Meg, what was the inspiration behind this book? What were you going after?
Yeah, the inspiration sort of was coming at me in two directions. One was I was counseling and advising all of these female graduate students that are late 20s, early 30s. But then I was raising two girls at home. They're 7 and 4. And they are, you watch children negotiate, and they do all the right things. They know what they want. They don't care what you think. They ask. They keep asking. And I was just wondering, at what point in a woman's life do we sort of stamp out that ability to ask for what we want? And I saw this connection between these valuable things I was learning from my small negotiating children and wanting to sort of tell these graduate students and myself about how we can argue for more in our life.
Meg Myers-Morgan is author of Everything is Negotiable, The 5 Tactics to Get What You Want in Life, Love, and Work. She writes, take control over how you tell the story of your life. Speak up and out about yourself. Let your voice be heard. Give people a reason to buy whatever it is you're selling. Let's get your thoughts on words to live by at 800-642-1234. What was your most difficult life negotiation and how did it turn out? Call in, tweet us at WPR Mornings. We'll get back to this in just a bit. News is next on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Author Meg Myers-Morgan has learned about negotiation through the eyes of her young daughters, and especially their persistence about asking for cookies. They will ask, and they will ask again and again. They will negotiate the location of the cookie on the counter for ease of asking again later. Total brilliance. There are lots of parents out there nodding their heads yes, because we've seen these tactics in action, and perhaps we should learn more from our young children through their persistence. Join in as we talk about the book Everything is Negotiable, 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Meg, what can we learn from cookie placement and what you've learned from your daughters?
Yeah, so I think there's 3 reasons why people don't negotiate, whether it's salary or anything else. The first is they didn't know that they could. The second is they don't know what they're going to ask for, or they don't know their own value. And the third is they're worried about what other people will think. Women often stop themselves from negotiating for anything because they don't want to seem greedy or a nuisance. And if you look at how my child negotiates for really everything, none of those things are holding her back. And so it's just a matter of knowing that you can and knowing that there's value in the ask. And that it's not always about asking and the outcome being getting what you want. But when you ask that question, when you ask for what you want, you shape that for yourself. And then you don't want to accept anything less than that.
What is the value in the ask? What does that mean?
Yeah, I had this student that I was helping get a job, and she got the offer, and I said, well, let's go back and negotiate. And she said, no, I don't want to do that. I'm afraid I'm going to seem greedy. I don't know if this is a situation where I can negotiate. And so we finally talked about it, and she decided she wanted to negotiate because the salary was so low, and so she asked, and they came back and said no. And she just said to me, like, once I asked, I knew that's what I had to have. It wasn't fair for me to have less than that. So she turned the job down. And it was just because she made that ask, she realized she couldn't accept less.
Wow. So that was a real awakening for her to realize her self-worth.
Yeah. Because we think it's just about what it means to the other person to make that ask, but it's also what it means to us to actually say out loud, this is what I want, and more importantly, this is what I deserve.
One of the tactics seems sort of counterintuitive, and you talk about it, never give your all. Yeah. What is that about?
Yeah, I just kept hearing the phrase, I'm not going to do X until I can give it my all. And I just was reflecting on how insane that is, because we can't give our all to anything. And I think instead you just give your sum to a lot of things. And if we buy into giving our all, that's why women struggle with perfectionism. They're tied to the same idea. So I say, give your best, be excellent, but you don't have to give everything of yourself. And if you think you have to give everything of yourself, that's why you're probably not doing more things, because it just seems exhausting.
One of the things that we encounter sometimes when we're booking guests here on the morning show is sometimes women will say, Well, I can come on, but I know someone who is more qualified than I am. And we have a series of these negotiations in a way saying, no, we would really love it to have you on. And then they sometimes look to their colleague who would be male and say, no, you'd probably want him on. So what is that about?
I think we've been kind of conditioned to downplay our value. There's lots of studies about how women won't brag, and even if they do, it's the women that judge them more harshly. So we sort of have this condition of somebody knows better than me and sort of devaluing ourselves, which is sort of the purpose of this book, is to remind people that if you're being called, you are the expert. And if you're in the room, you deserve to sit at the table. We just keep sort of thinking that we're less than we are. And it's we've got to negotiate out of that.
What about negotiation in marriage and negotiation with a spouse? Because that is that hits home very personally, and it's not in the work setting. Should we take negotiations there differently?
I think it's always about what I say. You document the pain. You don't work through the pain. And as I'm married to a man, so as a woman, instead of working through the pain, making all the meals, I need to document the pain and come home and tell my husband, look, you've got to do more in this area. And so when we had kids, we kind of had to renegotiate the terms of our marriage because the marriage was different now. There was another person and now two other people in this relationship. And I think so often women will just take what they have right now and assume this is all they can have, rather than coming home or even with friendships or whatever and saying, here's the pain point. I'm frustrated, or I'm resentful, or I'm exhausted, and where there's a pain point is a place to negotiate.
You've seen women get advice to say, well, you can just try harder. Can't you just work harder? Can you look for workarounds to make this all possible? Do you find that there is this juggling that goes on to the extent that maybe it won't work?
Work harder is probably, we not only hear that, but we say that to ourselves, that we say, I can handle this. I see everybody else handle it. I can do it, because none of us are incredibly honest about how hard our struggle is. And I think again, going back to figuring out what's sort of troubling you or ailing you or that pain point. And I never think that working harder is the goal, because all the women I know, are the hardest working people out there. And yet, as you said, with your guests, they still don't think it's enough. And I don't think working harder is the answer. I think working smarter and sort of relying on other people, which is something, you know, women just don't love to do.
There's a striking quote from your book about getting out of your own way, and said, your delusions should have their hands on the wheel and their feet on the gas.
Mm-hmm.
Why are our delusions of all things something we should pay attention to?
I think that often women like to say things like dream jobs, or that's a dream of mine, as though it's not something realistic. It's just something that they have in the back of their head. And I always say, you know, that dream or that delusion, make that a goal, make that a plan. That should be the thing you're going after, because I've never heard any woman's dream something that was unobtainable. It's just the way they talk about it makes it this glittery thing off in the distance. And I think if it's in your head, it's probably something that you would be really good at, or that would make you really happy. You should go after that.
So, Meg, if we could start today on negotiating tactics, on some achievable things we can do to start looking at life in negotiable ways, what would you tell us?
I think what holds women back a lot is that concern over how they're going to be perceived. Women historically and in the research won't even speak up in meetings because they don't want to be perceived as bossy or aggressive. And often when women are talking to me and needing to negotiate something, they're again worried about how they're going to come across. And so I think a great start is to reframe how that perception would be. And it's often a positive when you negotiate. It makes you look confident and competent, and that you're standing up for yourself. And so kind of reframe the concerns you have about what people will think as a very positive thing for you standing up and asking for what it is you want.
And there can be smaller negotiable things. I mean, when we think negotiation, we often think of the big things, the home, the bidding between on a home, and the salary. But there are smaller things in life that are negotiable. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I think we make life out to be, I have to have these massive answers to these massive questions, but it's really these daily negotiations. And so one quick one that I always tell specifically women is, your calendar is a philosophical document. So if you're stressed out, you know, what's happening on your calendar? And you know, women will show me their calendar, and it's just booked with stuff they don't want to do, or you know, all these meetings. Can you negotiate your calendar today to make it better for you?
I had a colleague who decided to start putting on her calendar lunch, reminding herself to eat.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the things I've heard is we don't ever schedule the work. We just schedule the interruptions. And so I've never actually scheduled, like, grading papers. And then I can never find a time to grade papers. So, yeah, look at that calendar and make that negotiation right there today.
But you also have this open door in terms of your work and your job where you allow people to come in and then you just allow this your work to kind of unfold during the day. Is that right?
Yeah, I have an open door policy. And so sometimes the work that I do during the day is just meeting with students back to back and not getting done what I wanted to get done. And my argument there is, the most important thing you can do is sort of take care of the people that are right there in the room. And that's often how you're going to make the most lasting change, even in your life, is just working with what you have and who's in the room with you right now can lead to bigger lasting change.
So, Meg, if you're focused on the moment and the people with you in the room, what happens to your emails?
Oh, yeah.
Seriously.
That's a negotiation I am still always working on, and I am always reading about better ways to do email. I haven't cracked that code, but I have learned to negotiate with myself about how often I'm going to check it.
As we wrap up here, Meg, have you learned anything about yourself in writing this book?
Yeah, as I was writing this book, I experienced everything I'm telling people not to do. I was comparing myself to other writers, just truly everything. And my husband stopped me and said, you've written the book on this. Now you have to negotiate exactly like you're telling people to do. And I say, I guess I wrote the book that I needed to have.
Well, Meg, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Kate.
Meg Myers-Morgan is author of the book Everything is Negotiable, The 5 Tactics to Get What You Want in Life, Love, and Work. She's an assistant professor at the University of Oklahoma and director of its graduate programs in public administration and nonprofit management. We've been talking to her on the morning show here on the Ideas Network. Stay with us.